Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
On Friday, October the 24th, the Norris Group proudly presented its seventh annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefited Make-A-Wish and St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. This event could not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Auction.com, Housing Wire, Property Radar, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, and President Bill Tan, the North San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration, Wholesale Capital Corp, New Western Acquisition, MVT Productions, and White House Catering. For event video and information, visit isurvivedrealestate.com.
I do think that interest rates in the U.S. are going to stay low for some time. And I think it's a function of the fact that the U.S. economy is clearly now the strongest economy on the globe, and that if you are seeking a place to place your capital, you're going to place that in the place that has the best combination of return and safety.
Okay, so just thinking kind of down the road, we have a strong dollar. It's made some impressive gains against other.
Oh, again, you're overstating things.
I didn't overstate anything.
It's up 4.5% in the last few months, and it's still down 20% from where it was 15 years ago.
Okay.
It's a pretty modest adjustment.
So it doesn't have any negative impact on things like exports?
If it keeps going, but I don't think it will, because it's already slowed down some. Mainly, keep in mind, that's mainly against the euro. Against, for example, the Chinese yuan, it's still stable, completely stable. So it depends on who you're looking against. Against developing countries, it's still where it is. It's come up a little bit against developed countries, mainly the yen and the euro.
Okay. Doug, when you look at the employment situation, the unemployment chart or the jobs, as far as the total number of jobs that are in place now, what does that chart tell you?
Well, we look at a couple of things. Sorry. I was getting ready to use a statistic, so I wanted a little further away there. There are a couple of ways that we look at things. One is, it is true that the U.S. has the same number of, in fact, now a little more than the total number of employed people that we had prior to the crisis. But if you look at when we will have the total number of full-time employed people, our projections are that's about a year from now. Then if you adjust for the change in the working age population to get back to that same number of employed people, that's actually mid-2016. And if you're looking with that population workforce adjustment to the same number of full-time jobs, that's actually early 2018. Now, if job growth accelerates beyond that, then obviously those numbers will move forward. So we survey people monthly, and now that we're 5 months past the average length of an expansion in the U.S. Since World War II, we still have 55% of surveyed people that think the economy is heading the wrong direction. So what that does is shows to us that there's a bifurcation, part of which is driven by uncertainties in terms of employment. So the other chart that we look at is there's been a lot of discussion about Obamacare shifting jobs from full-time to part-time because of the cost implications. So we take a look at that at full-time and part-time employment. At the beginning of this expansion, almost all the jobs that have been created since the expansion began have been full-time jobs. But what happened during the crisis was that roughly 3 million jobs went from full-time to part-time and have not returned to full-time. Not maybe one person took a part-time job and the person that was in that job went to full-time or something. But basically, you converted about 3 million workers to part-time. So there's still, in the population, there's a sense in which this has not been a recovery, and there's a bifurcation of attitudes in the public as a result of that. You're hearing it in the discussion of income distribution as an after effect of the public policies.
Now, how does California play out, let's say? Are we in better shape than the U.S.?
Oh, yeah, absolutely we are. And if I may, not every statistic you have was perfectly fine, but I will also say that it wasn't maybe necessarily relevant.
Sean, you want to come up here? We need
who's buying the drinks later? That's what I want to know.
Look, I agree with you. The labor market is still out of whack. We know that. Before the recession began, let's look at distressed workers. Underemployed, discouraged workers, long-term unemployed. There were 7 million before. They peaked at 9 million. They're now below 13 million. The key here, if you want to talk about growth, you have to look at where that trend is going. And the answer is it's going down. Again, 20, now we're at less than 13. We need to get back to 8 to call things normal, which is a couple of years off. There's no doubt about that. But it's moving in the right direction.
Okay. Yeah.
And when you're talking about growth, when you're talking about home price growth, permit growth, whatever growth, what's important is that trend is down. And so that's why I say it's not... We have to keep in mind that we're moving in the right direction. We're not back. No, nobody's ever said we're healed from the Great Recession. But we are getting there, and that's important. And yes, California's ahead of that game. We lost more jobs in the course of the downturn. We've now added them all back. And when you look at growth in the state, it's not just San Jose and San Francisco. Indeed, if you look on a year-on-year basis and ask, what is the fastest growing economies in the state? Believe it or not, it is Kern County, Bakersfield. Number four is Fresno. And number five is the Inland Empire.
Is that because it came down so far?
Absolutely. But the point here, you know, and we've said this all the time. I not too long ago, I was at an event, and someone made this comment about, oh, we're shocked that the Inland Empire is starting to come back. I'm not. Look, this state has something that everybody in this world wants, which is one of the most amazing living environments you can have. People want to be here. It's a difficult place to do business. I have a business. I get that. I deal with it on a day-to-day basis. But as a result of its sheer desirability, this place continues to succeed. And we're certainly seeing the bounce back now. So the numbers are clear. We're in for a good, steady run. Indeed, my biggest problem with the state's economy, and I know at some point I'm going to circle back to this, is a lack of housing. We just don't build enough to support the kind of growth we should be having. And it's an enormous constraint on the economy.
Now, you think builders are holding back for
reason? CEQA, California Environmental Quality Act. The abuses of the system. Look what happened up in Lancaster just a couple days ago. Big thing. Japanese company is going to come in, build an enormous plant to build rail cars. In the end, the reason they decided to leave California, go someplace else, was because the unions, which wanted a better union contract, were threatening to sue them under CEQA. And the Japanese are like, well, we're out of here. This is ridiculous. I mean, why should we be dealing with an environmental lawsuit on the basis of a contract negotiation? What kind of nonsense is this? And so CEQA has become this tool used to abuse any particular interest by a group of lawyers and small interest groups, including the unions, that has held back a steady increase in our housing supply. Put this in perspective, we have 12% of the nation's population. We have more than the national population growth. We have a faster growth rate. Yet, nevertheless, over the last 20 years, we produced about 8%, 9% of new homes. We are so short of supply right now. And, you know, a couple of years ago, the state was panicking, right? Kamala Harris, we had to have a homeowner bill of rights because everybody has to protect ourselves from these big evil banks because prices will just continue to fall. Well, now we're on the other side of that equation. The reality has shown itself. The problem, they should never have been worried about falling prices. What they should be worried about is what's going on right now, which is spiking prices, because we don't have enough housing.
My favorite two recent anecdotes about the California housing market, I was speaking to a group of investors in San Jose, and the lady that drove me back to the airport said she had some rental properties. And she said, you know how in most rentals, if you want a pet, you have to pay a pet deposit. She said, we charge monthly rent. So I was going to try to get my wife to move to California so I could reduce the pet supply. But the other one was a builder that I talked to about 6 months ago. He had 2,000 developable lots outside of San Francisco, which he had been through 13 public hearings over 3 years in an attempt to complete the permitting process.
Right. And they still voted him down. We know about that one. It was a disaster. Are you kidding me?
Incredible.
And the former mayor of San Francisco said, the reason we voted it down was that wasn't going to be affordable housing. Are you kidding me? When all the 2,000 you know, people making a lot of money who you now denied housing to are now going to go down to one of your wonderful middle-class neighborhoods and gentrify it. So congratulations.
Well, the long-term implication of that, though, is that to the extent that you can't find housing at an affordable level for your workforce, you'll start to see the migration of businesses to a place where they have a better labor-capital cost ratio.
It's a little more delicate dance than that, but you're absolutely right. It's the biggest thing. You know, all the time we hear how Texas has grown so much faster than we have. What's funny is that's not on a per capita basis. The reason Texas has grown faster than California is because they have approximately 2.5 times the rate of population growth, which is 100% a housing issue.
We would have more people if we only had more vacant houses available.
Yeah. So now, mind you, dealing with the traffic I dealt with to get over here today, maybe this is a good policy. Don't get me wrong. But let's at least acknowledge it.
I really have to get my arms around that one, but that's okay. Okay. So you're saying that now we look at a chart of sales and it's down. And
well, it's going to come back.
Well, but it's down. From,
and by the way, here's a better statistic. Take sales, subtract foreclosures, because foreclosures and the investor wave were one part of the cycle. Let's look at retail demand. So take sales plus new home sales, subtract foreclosures 6 months earlier, and do that graph. And what you see is it came down, and now it's bouncing back. So the investors are fading because the foreclosures are fading, but now you're starting to see a second surge in the market, which is the retail buyers starting to come back because of easier credit conditions, because Fannie Mae is out there doing their job, finally, and getting money out to people. It's been a number of years. Credit conditions are becoming easier, and people have equity now because the price increases in prices that have occurred because the investor wave pushed prices up, taking 12 million people underwater and turning into 4 million people underwater.
So there is
a whole second wave starting to come online right now, and there's a whole second surge in the real estate markets. It's coming. Next year is going to be great for real estate.
If only there was something to buy.
This is a lot different than the first time you met me, isn't it?
Well, I'm glad. Obviously, you need both sides. Okay. We've painted a really rosy picture in this. If we talk to a builder about why they're not building more homes, I think the answer will be that they're not selling what they're making. They don't have enough confidence to go and build spec homes. They're building homes that are literally pending, and then they build them. I mean, honestly, if they had that much confidence, they have. Riverside
there's
has.
There's no permitted lots. What are you talking about?
No.
Where are they going to build
them? There's 40,000 permitted lots.
Where?
Well, there's a company that's their job to count them. And in Riverside, there's a few. Okay? You watch. I'm in a neighborhood of
then start building.
I'm in a neighborhood in them, and they literally are making these houses one or two at a time, and they're falling out of escrow, and they're sitting vacant. And it's not in a bad area, I tell you. So I don't think builders. It's always interesting to me, and I think I heard.
We need to take a drive. I need to see this neighborhood because I'm
no
not
problem.
Seeing that in aggregate statistics.
You're welcome. You're welcome to come over.
And besides, maybe in your neighborhood, maybe you're right. Maybe there's not enough billionaires, to buy all those homes in your neighborhood.
Was there? I think I remember this statement being made in 2005 about we're not building enough homes. That was true. Was that your opinion then?
Yes.
That we were not building enough homes in 2005.
And if you remember, even in the middle of the crisis, I kept telling people, look, California has the lowest housing vacancy rate in the continental U.S. We are going to bounce back and bounce back in a big way. This whole cycle was never about supply and demand, ever. Ultimately, that last huge cycle we went through was about the credit quality that was driving the real estate market.
Okay.
And if anything, today, the credit quality is more than good. The pendulum is still too far in one direction. Now, mind you, in a year and a half, if that credit pendulum starts swinging over and we start having ninja loans again, God forbid, then we can start pulling the panic button. But that's not what's going on out there. You know that, and I know that.
Doug, do you feel like the buyer has more willingness than capacity, or is really hesitant because they look at housing and go, I don't know if I want one?
Well, we recently went over to the Fed and talked with Janet Yellen, and the following is the sentence that we use at a national level. So obviously, California has some very special characteristics that are different. It's 12% of the U.S. market, too, so it's substantive. But broadly speaking, the sentence is, today, demand weakness trumps credit tightness. So what that says is that that doesn't mean that that's going to last forever. We're not sure how long that will be the case. And it doesn't mean that credit's not tight. But what it says is, particularly among younger households, we see, and we've been surveying intensively and looking at the census data on characteristics of those younger households, and in almost every metric, they're buying homes at much lower levels. So take a couple of examples. One of the biggest triggers to buying a house is marriage. So if you look through the census data, what you see is the rate of marriage is substantially lower for the same age cohort than it has been, say, 15 years ago or so. Part of that is because people went to school. You didn't have good job prospects in the middle of the crisis. You go back to college. You go to college. You delay marriage. And then the next trigger is having children or probably getting a job and then having children. That's one of the things we learned in the crisis. If you lend money long at fixed interest rates, it's a great thing if the borrower has a job and if it has a related income. So we looked at the most recent American Community Survey data and segmented it out for those who are married, have a college degree, have a child, and have income over $95,000, which would be a pretty good first-time buyer almost anywhere in the United States. And they are significantly lower in terms of their acquisition of homes. So we asked them, we surveyed young renters, and we said, how much is getting a mortgage a problem for you? It was the fifth-ranked consideration in their view. The aspiration to own a home is the same. They're just saying, look, we've seen the damage that when people got in too soon. We want to be mobile. The job market's been difficult for us coming out of the college, so there's not a reason to hurry. Renting can be a good option till we get the money saved up, and a lot of them are actually living at home. And on that front, I used to make a bad joke, said the highest share of adult children living at home that we've ever had in the reported data. Both parties to that transaction see it as an adverse situation. So my staff said, do you know that that's really true? And I said, well, actually, I don't. So we surveyed them. We surveyed households which have adult children living at home, found some really interesting things. We did not survey the children because we didn't want to start the fight. So if you segment them from 18 to 22, which is prime college years, what you see is pretty much that's what's going on for that group. But then if you segment, look at the 23 to 34-year-old group, you see something very different. In that younger group, 54%, only 54% of those households have a full-time working parent, which was a number that was much lower than we thought. Obviously, only 20% of the kids are working full-time because that's the college age. And 72%, I think, was the number of parents that said that was a good thing. 20% said they wish they had chosen a different option. 8% were ambivalent, I think. But in the older ones, the interesting thing there was there were only 38% of those households that had an older adult child, only 38% had a full-time working parent. And 48% of the children were working full-time. So there was clearly a different economic transaction in that household, which in our view reflects part of this bifurcation in the view of the public about whether this has been a good recovery or not when it comes to jobs and income. That we thought was fairly interesting.
Maybe you should just send them a memo that they should build homes in California, and that would fix everything.
There you go.
We have reached, we have to end our interviews with Christopher and Doug. Thank you very much for both of your input. As always, fun. Okay. We're now going to invite four other panelists up. Dave Cogdill, former senator, is now the president and CEO of the California Builders Industry Association, a position he has served in since 2013. Prior to serving on its board, Dave was the county assessor for Stanislaus from 2011 to 2013. He also served as a commissioner on the California Water Commission and as a chairman of the Maddie Institute at Fresno University. after departing from legislature. During his years in office, Coggio worked often with leaders to resolve issues relating to rural health care and education. Dave, welcome. Anywhere you like, fine. Sean O'Toole is with us again. Sean, prior to launching Property Radar, Sean O'Toole successfully purchased and flipped more than 150 residential and commercial foreclosures. Leveraging 15 years in the software industry, Sean used technology as a key competitive advantage to build his successful real estate investment track record. Sean has always thrived in a startup environments and as such became a key contributor at Xing Technology, acquired by Real Networks, etc. Sean, thank you. And how many parents have a 12-year-old son that's using his 3D printer to create the universe that's going to go in a contest nationally? So. Okay. Bill Cosgrove. Bill is the chairman-elect for the Mortgage Bankers Association, in addition to serving as the chief executive officer of Union Home Mortgage. And this is in Ohio. He was named the company's president 3 years after joining the Union National Mortgage Company in 94, which he purchased in 1999 and is expected to close over $1.2 billion in lending this year. On October 19th, Bill was officially sworn in as the chairman of the Mortgage Bankers Association. Bill first began his career in the mortgage banking industry in 86 as a loan officer and since then has served in many positions for MBA. Bill, welcome to our panel. Gary Thomas is a realtor in Orange County, California, is the immediate past president of the National Association of Realtors, a second-generation real estate professional. Thomas is the CEO and founder of Altera Real Estate. He has been in the business for more than 30 years and has served the industry in countless national and state leadership roles, including vice president and liaison to government affairs for National Association of Realtors, served on several presidential advisory groups such as Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, Housing Opportunities Advisor Board, on and on. Lifetime, actually, most of these gentlemen have served for a lifetime in their industry, and we're very lucky to have them on our panel. So thank you guys very much. I just almost want to start with, you guys need to build more homes, I guess.
I agree, we do.
Actually, if you look at a chart at California home construction, and a lot of times it gets blended with apartments, you know, if you blend it with apartments, it doesn't look so bad. But when you look at single family construction, have we ever been this low? I mean, literally since the 70s?
Well, I think it's been a while, and we're certainly below where we had hoped to be at this time. I think the projections at the beginning of the year for 2014, we were hoping to see 100,000 starts this year, and those numbers have now been modified to about 85,000, which is pretty close to what we did in 2012. So, you know, for us, it's certainly the recovery is here. It's not at the rate that we'd like to see it.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, Coachella Valley Real Estate Investors Association, Coldwell Banker Town and Country, Costa Mesa Marriott, Council of Multiple Listing Services, Elite Auctions, In a Day Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts, IRA Services Trust Company, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, LA South REIA, The Avis Tax Wealth Management, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Pilot Limousine, Primary Residential Mortgage, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Sunoco Corporation, South Point Companies, Spinnaker Loans, Tony Alvarez, UDirect IRA Services, Resident Lens Photography, and SJREI. See iSurvivedRealEstate.com for a video of the live event and more information.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.